children. What are we gonna do to show we care? How are we gonna be there for our children when they feel that life has just not been that fair?
Good evening, and welcome back to MASC's weekly radio show on Family Matters. MASC, Mothers and Fathers Aligned, saving kids of all ages, all stages, for mental health issues, including addictions, school issues. And now we're right before school, and we know that there are kids that are not yet registered, unfortunately. So if anyone knows any kid that needs a school, please call MASC so we can try and help get your child into a program that best suits their needs. And our confidential number from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. is 718-758-0400. And you can call anonymously. Maybe you want to jot our number down for a friend, a neighbor, maybe someone you sit next to in shul. Please write our number down, 718-758-0400. I know we spoke about having Yanky Hurwitz on again for a follow-up of our last conversation. We will be having him on in the interim. We are very lucky to have on tonight with us. I'd like to welcome Rivki Youngreis. Good evening. How are you?
Hi. It's wonderful to be here, Rahama. Thank you.
And it's always wonderful to work with you, alongside you, on many cases, many trainings, and being a Nefesh member. So for my listeners out there, I just want to say that Rivki Youngreis, who is an LCSW, she's an adult and adolescent and child psychotherapist. She is also a sand play therapist and self-regulation somatic therapist. She's certified in EMDR and specializes in abuse and trauma. In addition, I would like to say that I sit on the board of directors for Nefesh with Rivki, who is very involved, and I'd like to thank you, Rivki, for being on this evening with us.
Well, I want to thank you, Rahama, because you're amazing in the work that you've been doing, and we are both on the board of Nefesh and in your organization, MASC, and you have helped so many of us, and our therapists also know who to turn to, so we really appreciate your devotion and your passion to what you do in helping the cloud.
Thank you, and of course, I always like to say I cannot do this alone. It is only with my staff that we're able to accomplish what we do at MASC, so thank you. I want to talk about trauma tonight and what it does to a person and how they can heal what's available. I would like you to first tell my listeners, what is trauma? Tell us a little bit about it, please.
Okay, so trauma really defined is when we have experienced an out-of-control, frightening experience that has disconnected us from all sense of safety, from love, from coping. We can't even use our resources. So it can involve a single experience, or enduring repeated events that completely overwhelm the individual's ability to cope or deal with any of the emotions that are involved in that experience. So we all know traumatic dysregulation, which is caused by overwhelming events, will cause stress symptoms. We have stress symptoms. And stress symptoms are normal responses to feeling overwhelmed or threatened, and that's why, you know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu created us in a way that we have what people may have studied in school, the fight, flight, and freeze survival responses that are developed to protect us from danger. So if anything happens the first minute, in the moment of stress, our hormones are released, our heartbeat and our breath increases, we move faster, we hit harder, we see better, we respond, we're in a state of high alert. And these neurological and physiological responses occur so we can better protect ourselves. But once the danger or the overwhelming event has passed, our nervous system will calm down and we return to a state of equilibrium of balance. So we all experience, you know, falling off a bike, car accident, different things, but for a few months or a few weeks, we're a little bit shook up. And then we, you know, Baruch Hashem, hopefully settle into normal daily life.
And, you know, there's so much talk about trauma. Like you said, there are accidents, Lolo, there is death, there is so many, you know, people could fall off a bike, like you said. Traumatic events really leave a mark on us. And I want you to please explain the difference from trauma to regular stressors.
So basically, trauma response does differ from normal stress reaction because when a trauma occurs, your world, as you knew, has been impacted. Your whole sense of trust and your safety has been altered or breached. The nervous system is totally dysregulated. And what happens is it's like the rug has been pulled under you. It's like events that shock you or surprise you. And that's really where the breach of the barrier of trust has occurred. And when that happens, and it can affect you physically, mentally, socially, in very many physical forms as well. And what we notice is that when a person is shocked to the core, and it could be from something that's unexpected, even falling down the stairs when you didn't expect it can make you fearful, can make you be careful, slipping on the ice. It depends on the resiliency of the person, the environmental factors, the number of traumas they've had. But that's how trauma can impact on you. And what one has to see is how it's impacting us. Do we go back to normal, regular functioning, or are we experiencing different symptoms?
So let's talk about how trauma affects children versus adults differently, please.
So generally, adults and children are affected similarly with trauma. They both experience discomfort and pain and shock, but they'll react with different symptoms, you know. And it was interesting that during World War II, we had the Blitzkrieg from Germany in London, and the therapeutic study showed that adults repeated and recalled and talked about the events of the bombs raining down, and their panic in not finding their loved ones. And they were traumatized, and they spoke about it over and over again. Children do not really, their talk is play. And what they did in their play therapy is they built buildings over and over again and broke them down over and over again. So what happens is that what traumatization is stress that's frozen in place. It's locked into a pattern of neurological distress. And it doesn't do away by returning to a state of balance. It just gives you more symptoms. And when the trauma occurs, memories are frozen in time. And our behaviors today are the way we navigate the present. So what do I mean by that? For adults, if they have a trauma, and like I mentioned, slipping on an ice or being in a car accident, they might have symptoms like not wanting to go to the same place or not wanting to drive at night. Different things might occur because of their trauma. And they will experience different things that affect them. And children who are younger and can't really express themselves so often will regress in their behaviors. In order, you know, they're going to use the only strategies they have in order to feel safe. See, trauma occurs and we feel not safe. So an adult might want to only go shopping to that area where she slipped, or where someone tried to grab her pocketbook, she'll only want to go with a friend. She doesn't feel safe anymore. A child will often regress in their behaviors. They may become clingy. They'll say they have stomach aches. They'll have headaches. They'll get angry. They'll panic or easily get moved to tears. They may stay in high alert. They don't want to go to bed. They want to sleep with their mother or father. They become hypervigilant. And this is the kind of symptoms that we'll see in children because they're not feeling a sense of safety, which is what trauma has done. Trauma has ruptured, has impacted in a way that we don't feel safe.
You know, we spoke about that you do Santre, and we're talking about children. It's really an important part that young children, when they do have significant traumas, that they do go for play therapy. Can we talk a minute about play therapy, please?
Well, I'm gonna say that there's different modalities for children that I use, and many children. I mean, I work with adults and I work with children as well. So half my practice is with children. And what I do is I have modalities that will make children feel empowered and feel safe in order to experience and to get over some of the events they had and to give them a sense of self and a sense of worth and be able to come over anything that has affected them through the trauma, or even if they just have plain anxiety and didn't have a trauma. There are things that you have to do with children that differ from adults, because a child won't sit on the couch and speak to you. They don't know how to express themselves. And one of the things that I do in my office is teach them emotions, teach them the feelings they're feeling and how to express them. They don't even know when their gut tells them, uh-oh, this is not good. And that's why children can be led to do things that they shouldn't be doing. They don't listen to their bodies. They need to learn to listen somatically. They need to learn how to express themselves. It's not just things are bad and good. There's frustration, there's irritation, there's ambivalence, there's fear. So they need to know all these emotions and able to discuss that with the caregivers in their lives. And one of the things that we also need to do is let them play out their feelings of being manipulated or not being in control or having, you know, things, awful things or not such awful things happen to them. And they play it out in the sand, or they play it out in through play and different type of techniques that children feel more comfortable with. I have hundreds of miniatures. I have different things that will make children feel comfortable, be able to experience and relate their feelings, and have some of that trauma come out through their body and through their actions.
Especially since children don't always have the language.
And that's what we need to teach them, yes.
Right. So play therapy plays a big role in help healing from trauma and anxiety, et cetera. So it's very important.
Yes, I'm sorry, Bahama, go ahead.
No, I'm saying it's very important to know that there are these modalities available other than just speaking therapy.
Yeah,
for young
and I could discuss that a little later on. I just want to discuss a little bit more about the different types of trauma, but then we'll talk about the different modalities of treatment.
Great. So you talked about the children and the adults, how it's different for them.
So one of the things that, go ahead.
No, you can go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead. Okay, so one of the things that I noticed in treating children was that many times they'd come in because they were exhibiting symptoms of trauma, but they didn't really have a trauma in their life. You know, we did a trauma history. They didn't have hospitalizations or, you know, accidents or been in a fire. These are type of, you know, traumas that occur that we know are world events or different or just in the home, things that occur where you have a terrible fall or you had stitches, that could be called trauma. And then there's something that we discovered and is recent. It's called intergenerational trauma. And the difference between that is that when we have children that have caregivers that have been more neglectful or detached, and children have endured that kind of childhood, and don't have the coping skills to feel safe, to explore new things and relationships. So in order to explain that a little bit more, you'd have to understand the theory of attachment, which is a very big word today, attachment theory. And what that tells us is that sometimes, and even if a parent was well-intended, if a parent was sick or a parent has so many children and one child fell through the cracks and was not seen or heard or felt the way that child might have felt, sometimes they'll take on symptoms of trauma. And that is the difference between a trauma of a world, you know, an event like an accident or a fire or a hospitalization. Intergenerational trauma is when parents have their own fears and their own needs and their own anxieties and negative emotional experiences. Those will affect the children's ability to have a secure sense of self and to cope with the demands of life. So basically, when you have attachment with a child in very early on, when a baby is born, the immediate goal is a caregiver connecting to the child, seeking and maintaining closeness in moments of threat so the child can also obtain. That's where they learn, they're being fed. Their diapers being changed. They're being attended to when they're crying. They're being heard all through their childhood. I mean, and we're not saying completely 100%. We're talking about a 35% is good enough, like Donald Winnicott has says. If they've been attended to 35-40%, they hopefully will obtain security and comfort and protection, and that's why they're able to explore the world, the way they have relationships with others. They're not suspicious. They're not anxious. They're open to the world in spite of different things. They don't have a good experience with a teacher. They can handle it because they've had a loving, secure, home-based environment. But children that have grown up in abusive, neglectful, or less than good enough environments internalize messages through the caregiver's behavior. And what happens is those are called attachment wounds or ruptures. The children see themselves as worthless, as bad. They never feel good enough. They may resort to anger to avoid feeling painful emotions. They may not be able to express emotions because you weren't allowed to express emotions. You weren't allowed to be seen or it wasn't tolerated at the home. So those are the type of things that can cause what they call intergenerational trauma. And, people are awful puzzled. Why do we need to know about my childhood? What? But, what I always say to clients is that it's not a blame game. Our parents might have been very well-intended, but somehow something wasn't seen or heard, and it's the time now to repair and try to do the best what we can with our lives today to navigate.
Absolutely, and there is no parent manual. So, everybody just goes into it, has children, lots of life around them goes on. And there are things that go on that are out of people's hands. And as a result, some children do get hurt.
It's funny that you say that. There is no manual. We go to drive a car, we have to go for read a manual. We have, to learn the computers, we have the manuals. We have a baby, we just leave the hospital. Nobody really gives us any type of tips, which
right.
is something that could be needed.
Right. And lots of times the parent has their own issues, like you said, let's say anxiety. So there are a lot of parents that call the helpline that say, oh, my child has anxiety, I need a therapist. And after talking to them for a while, we find out that one of the parents have anxiety. So it can be trickle down, genes, MOs, so many different ways that kids pick up on what their parents are going through as well.
Well, that's a very, very good point, Raham, and that's why even in an example of where we say, that's why we see children who have never been in the Holocaust, but they have symptoms passed down, and they're actually called second and third generation survivors because they have seen some of the behaviors that their parents or Leinu suffered, and have as a result of the Holocaust. And they internalize those fears, and they have I've seen young people that have never been in the Holocaust, they're constantly checking the doors and making sure that the cars are locked properly. They have things. They're afraid of the government because their parents were. So there's
right.
a lot of different things that are passed down. And studies have shown that even anxiety without Holocaust is a genetic type of component and could be cast down as well.
Right. So just I want to review impacts of trauma. There's loss of safety, there's loss of danger cues, there's loss of trust and shame, many times loss of intimacy or disassociation. There's loss of physical connecting to the body or sense of self, self-worth, and lots of times is reenactment. Can you just touch on the reenactment part again? Where maybe somebody will reenact something, their response to it?
Yeah. So basically, when a trauma occurs, memories are frozen in time. We have three parts of the brain, and there's one part of the brain that's called the reptilian part of the brain. I don't want to get too technical, but basically the memories we have discovered are frozen in that part of the brain. And often our behaviors today and the way we navigate the present are based on those frozen memories. So, for example, if we know the veterinarians that came home from Vietnam and they experiencing terrible things in the war and they see tanks blown up, their friends killed by bullets, if they would come home and they suffered from post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD, as a result of the trauma, if they heard a car bang or a trunk shut, many times that would trigger a memory of like a bullet sound, and they would go into shivers and shakes and the same experiences that they recalled from that time before. So, example, even just a small example, if I had a client who was expecting and she threw up from eggs, egg salad, and she won't go near eggs again. It's just a frozen memory, even though she's not feeling nauseous, that memory of the smell of the eggs might create that feeling for her. So that's a very simple example, but then there are worse examples which will make people avoid certain things because of, you know, or if they've had something happen, an airplane, people don't want to fly anymore. So there are different type of traumas that really affect you because the memory, the sounds, the sights, the smells are frozen in time. And if you have something that triggers you, that reminds you of that trauma, you will act the same way as you did when you first experienced it, unless that trauma is neutralized or has been worked on and has been processed.
So we only have a few minutes left, and I think it's important that we talk about when do you need treatment.
Okay, so now we know that, you know, traumatization is stress frozen in place. And it's locked into a pattern of neurological distress. And it doesn't go away after time. You know, you're just not getting back to yourself. And you're finding that you're getting symptoms that take on mental or social or emotional, physical forms. You could be getting headaches. You could be, you know, getting feelings of panic. There are things that occur. And that's really kind of when you see, and any type of treatment is needed when you're not able, when it's impacting on your life. If you can't function in a daily healthy way and the symptoms are overcoming you, then that's when you seek treatment. Was that the question, or did you ask me what kind of treatment?
Well, and now that we understand the treatment, what is the treatment that's available out there that best is used for trauma, the different modalities?
So there's been a change in the research now. It used to be that there was a lot of talk therapy, and there still is, and that should be integrated in any type of therapy because you need to have that connection. But there's something called the top-down approach and the bottom-up approach. And remember when I told you there were three parts of the brain? Mm-hmm. The bottom part of the brain is where the memories are stored of trauma. So if, let's say, because that's where the first message of the brain goes, and if we've ever experienced anything of fear, or if, let's say, we've been rear-ended by the back of a car, our heart starts to race, we start to get sweaty, we don't even know what happened, but our body reacts first. And what that's telling us is that 2 seconds later, the message gets to the brain, oh, what just happened? Someone just banged me in the back of the car. But your body starts to experience a lot of symptoms of trauma. So we're realizing that trauma is stored in the bottom part of the brain, and we need to use the body to relieve some of the symptoms also. So there's something called somatic therapy, where when trauma is locked and frozen in place, we use some of the body and the experiences and the sensations, and we guide our clients to release from the nervous system so it neutralizes the trauma. So that kind of therapy. Then there's EMDR, which is also considered a bilateral brain approach, which I've been doing EMDR for almost 20 years. I'm an approved consultant, and I actually have brought a few trainings into the community for it because it's a wonderful modality for trauma as well. And these are all evidence-based type of traumas. So basically, you know, I feel that it's very important to have a connection with a therapist, but you need to know different type of modalities, or really first have a sound clinical base of, you know, what social work and what psychotherapy is, and to be able to understand the psyche of a person. But then, you know, having different modalities for people experiencing trauma and anxiety or different phobias is a wonderful way to go, because you, it's like a toolbox. You see right. what you need for that person.
Right. And anyone that wants to speak with Rifki or make an appointment or even a staff training, one of your schools, any trainings for trauma, Rifki will be available. And you can call MASC and we can connect you to Rifki, where she will get back to you. And our number is 718-758-0400. There's so much more to talk about with trauma. I just wanted to get this, you know, get us talking about it, get us parents thinking about it, and maybe somebody out there will then pick up the phone and call for a referral to MASC or any other organization, or call you, Rifki, to help their loved one or themselves.
And one of the, I'm sorry, Raham, I just want to say one last thing, which is a very important piece also, is that now there's a brain curriculum type of curriculum that I do, and I think is so important to build resiliency in children and to give them exercises to learn how to cope. And I've been going into schools to teach the children that, because that's something that we want to do as a preventive, so that they could have resiliency
Excellent.
And coping skills and deal with the anxiety or the different things that they experience in life.
Excellent. Thank you for that. Thank you, Rifki, for being on tonight. And I would like
to thank you.
Oh, thank you.
Can I do that for a minute?
No, we're running out of time.
Well, come on. I'm still very amazed about all the things that you do. And you
thank
know what?
You.
The therapists
thank you.
Like us have a place to turn to, so we really
thank
appreciate
you.
It.
I just want to thank you, Rahama, for allowing me to do the show. And it's for Rafua Shalema for Sarah Bath Brindle. And Mayor Mordechai Ben Yetefega. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Rahama.
Thank you. And I would like to wish everyone a very good evening and a beautiful Shabbos. And let's always remember, hang in, hold on, hug tight. And if you need a referral, 718-758-0400. Thank you. And have a good night.
Good night, everybody.
Stuttering. This often misunderstood disability affects over 3 million Americans, and despite decades of research, both basic and clinical, the causes are still largely unknown and hard to treat.
Hi, my name is Yitzchak Weiss, founder of Speech Art. I'm a speech coach who for the last 15 years has been specializing in helping speech stutterers. I myself was a stutterer as a child until my late teens. I know firsthand that most stutterers go through years and years of pain. With Hashem's help, I've been able to successfully treat hundreds of people in a relatively short period of time, using methods I have developed over many years. The biggest chesed of helping a stutterer is showing them how easy they can help themselves and not go through a very long and lonely trip.
Please, contact Yitzhak Weiss, celebrated speech coach at Speech Art. For a consultation about how you or a loved one who's suffering from stuttering, lisps, and other speech impediments can find relief, call 929-444-3130. That's 929-444-3130.